The time is now approaching 3 o'clock, so it's time for your latest news bulletin with Tim Smith. He's still going.
Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM, this is your Election 50.
It's 3 a.m. I'm Tim Smith and this is the latest news. Labour holds Islington South, Finsbury Halton, Jarrow, Mitcham and Morden. Conservatives hold Fareham. The SNP have been making substantial gains from Labour in Scotland. The most high-profile Labour candidate to lose his seat so far is Douglas Alexander, Paisley and Renfrewshire, where there was a 34% swing to the SNP. The Scottish Nationalists have also taken seats from Labour in Dunbartonshire West, Glenrothes, Kilmarnock and East Kilbride, also Wishaw and Midlothian. The SNP is on course to take 58 of Scotland's 59 seats, according to the exit poll. The party's former leader, Alex Salmond, who's contesting the Gordon seat, thinks the Nationalists will play a role in the next government.
If, as seems likely, the SNP in unprecedented numbers unleash an electoral tsunami in Scotland, then I think it's extraordinarily difficult for David Cameron to claim legitimacy for his government over Scotland.
Douglas Alexander says it will be Labour's responsibility to re-win the trust of voters on what is looking like a bad night for the party in Scotland. Murray Black, the new SNP MP for his former seat Paisley and Renfrewshire South, is the youngest member of Parliament at only 20 years old. She is a third-year politics student at Glasgow University, has become the youngest MP since 1667. When she was born, Alexander was already working for Gordon Brown as a speechwriter. Murray Black won seats in Parliament for her constituency with a 5,684 majority. SNP leader Nicola Sturgeon has said that early indications are that it's going to be a very good night for her party in Scotland and that she would still be willing to work with Labour to create an anti-Tory majority. Exit polls have predicted that the Conservatives will gain the most seats overall. Tory candidate Liam Fox says that it's great news for his party, but a disaster for the Lib Dems.
Everyone says it, so it must be true that we have to wait and see the final results, but it's a very, very good result for the Conservatives, very good personal result for the Prime Minister, and a very bad result for both the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats, which is actually probably better described as catastrophic for them.
Despite debates concerning the reliability of pre-election polls versus exit polls, former Labour Cabinet Minister David Blunkett has suggested the exit poll could be right.
It is a very, very bad night for us, and my heart goes out to those candidates, particularly in Scotland, obviously, who have been swept away in the tsunami north of the border, and those who have struggled so hard here in England.
Ladbrokes have suspended betting on Conservative leader David Cameron being the next PM. Just half an hour ago, a Conservative majority was joint favourite at odds of 11 to 8. You are up to date with all the latest news. Join us again at 3:30.
Thanks very much for that, Tim Smith. Credit to the news team there, who just keep on going with those bulletins, letting you know all the seats, both marginal and safe, that are being... results coming flying in for left, right and centre. I believe now we're going live to one of our reporters, Maggie, who has a Labour candidate with her to talk to. Hello, Maggie.
Hello, everyone. I am here with Mr. Kim Fenley.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
How are you feeling tonight?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good, considering.
I just had before you Mr. Hugo Mabel.
Yep.
And I was he's also a teacher. You're also a teacher. Why so many teachers are deciding for politics?
Well, I think because you get to interact a lot with the younger generation. You get to see kind of how pissed off they are with how bad things are getting. So you get to really get inspired just by how much they fear about what's going to happen in the future. And you don't really get that interaction outside of the classroom with, say, you know, the general public. So it's a really good format for discussion and things like that, and it really does inspire you to kind of stand up and, you know, say something, I suppose.
Okay, why do you think, why did you decide, what is the best thing for you in this campaign?
In this campaign, I suppose it'd be keeping our deposit, because we're quite a small pie, so 500 quid to us is a lot of money. So that is the goal, I think. It used to be trying to finishing above UKIP, but that's gone out the window now. So just keeping the 5% is what we're after.
This is a rural constituency. There's not really social housing and similar problems. What is something that you've been, what have you been representing here, and what have you been trying to fix?
Quite a few things. I mean, we're trying to get a lot more local councils, a bit more power, more money, etc. Things like that. So power over like bus routes, power over housing associations and where housing development goes, and making sure that housing developers actually give facilities along with the many houses they're building. So like in Gillingham, they're building about 1,700 houses, but with no facilities to go with it. So we're trying to campaign saying that you need to bring in, schools or at least money for certain facilities to make sure people aren't living without them, the necessary means, basically. Also been campaigning on kind of young people issues, making sure that they have a voice and it's not just a constituency for retired old people.
Okay. A lot of people from, for example, Werewood, they are complaining that the small towns do not have enough attention here. Do you think that is a case here in North Dorset?
Yeah, but there's also a case, so I think people quite like that we are kind of not left out, but we don't have that much attention, people kind of not keep themselves, and they like to get on with their own business without too much interference. But certainly in terms of public funding, we do miss out in that sense. But we also have some of the lowest wages and highest house prices in the southwest. So there are certain other issues that you need to look at.
This is your first candidacy. What have you learned in this campaign, and maybe about your opponents? How did you get along with them?
The opponents are really great. We surprisingly got on quite well. Everyone, from UKIP to Lib Dems, Conservative, and Greens, all got on very well. You develop a kind of us and them atmosphere, almost with hustings and things like that. So it's quite nice, and they're very good at kind of sharing their experience, especially with somebody who's expanding for the first time.
What do you think about tonight? What will happen, on your opinion?
Nationally?
Here in North Dorset.
Here in North Dorset, I'm thinking Simon Hall will most likely win. It's been a Conservative seat for quite a while. It'd be interesting to see how well UKIP end up doing. But other than that, I'm guessing, remaining Conservative.
Okay. Will you be willing to go to any coalition? We've been talking about this before.
Yeah, maybe a coalition with Greens, perhaps, or probably not Lib Dem, because as you can see nationally, they're not going to be much of a party anymore. So probably just stay with Greens.
Why Greens?
We share most of their issues on social justice and things like that. Like, they do have some very extreme kind of policies that will end up making a lot of rich people leave the country. But on things like minimum wage, we do share a lot of ideals.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you
for being here with us. I wish you all the luck tonight and in the future.
All right. Thank you very much.
This was everything from from Tim and I here from North Dorset.
Thanks very much.
I hope you will come back to us again in a little bit when we will have some other interviews.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for that, Maggie. Apologies to anyone who found some of the language used in that clip there offensive. We are live. We do expect these things with live radio. And obviously, it's a very tense evening, so I can only apologise once again. Of course, the news about the MDNP seat has just recently reached us.
And with that marginal seat, a hot topic in our coverage, our reporter Jason Lewis recently caught up with a Conservative candidate, Robert Symes, before the announcement.
Robert Symes here at the poll count. How are you feeling just a couple of hours away from the announcement of the seat?
Well, optimistic. It's been a very good campaign over last month, 5 weeks. One has thought that we're winning, but the polls haven't been moving. The exit polls are a bit more hopeful, and I think so far things look in the count to be going our way. So hopefully it'll be a predictable result.
On those polls, do you think they're anything to go by really, or is it more a case of waiting and see how it goes? Because there's quite a lot of variance between certain polls, with that first poll giving Conservatives quite a big lead in the polls, whereas the others have been more tight.
It's an exit poll. People normally are more honest when they leave a polling station and say how they voted them when they're asked a week before or a day before. And it was accurate to within a few seats last time, but this may be an unusual election. There may be variations across the country, so we're just going to have to see. So far, so good.
What are you going to do with your time between now and the declaration?
Pace around and chat to people.
Thank you very much.
Excellent to hear a bit of an insight there from Jason as to the atmosphere down at a very key marginal seat this evening. We're now joined by our expert panel. We have Paddy and Shelley back with us. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Wonderful to have you back.
Hi, thank guys. You. So how are you feeling about all these results so far?
Well, I think we've had, I think we've seen a lot of really interesting stuff happening, especially in Scotland. There's been a real runaway. We were expecting, you know, the SNP to do well, but they've done exceptionally well, which is going to be a real, it's a real loss for Labour, really. So that was one of the not so big surprises, but still a surprise, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I do love me a swingometer. We're seeing less swingometers on the, you know, on the BBC. But I remember 2005 was the CGI one. It was very exciting. You had Jon Snow pushing it, and you know, and you thought this was peak political technology, and then it's gone away. But hopefully, you know, they got to be Douglas Alexander. I mean, what a losing to a 20-year-old student. I mean, this is exciting.
Do not ever underestimate students. A lesson to be learnt there.
That's right, and that says something about the political apathy of young people, then, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Is no one standing around here?
Not yet. Maybe next time.
There's also a Twitter account. Well, there's one set up from Paddy Ashdown's hat, which he famously said that he was going to eat if they only got 10.
I've seen that earlier, yeah.
And then there's one on Lib deposits. So, you know, keeping a running total of how many Lib Dim deposits they've lost. I think it's up to $4,000 now.
Oh, dear. So, anything surprising so far this evening, or is everything running pretty much the way you expected?
So far, the results seem to be bearing out the BBC exit polls. It'll be a tremendously good night for David Cameron. It'll be a tremendously good night for the Scots Nats. Possibly this is, you know, the last breath we'll see of the Libs, who were, you know, one of the great Western political parties, the Liberal Party of the 19th century. And, you know, if you almost think, I mean, if they went down in, you know, by speaking up for the virtues of immigration and the virtues of Europe in an election which were, at least in the early periods, you know, were dominated by Nigel Farage, then you maybe would give them credit for going down with a measure of valour and honour to, you know, to sort of the political cemetery. I don't think anyone at all thought it was going to turn out this way, but I think Ed Miliband's days will not be infinite after this, and we might very well see Harriet Harman as a caretaker leader in an election process, assuming they don't think there will be a snap election after.
Yeah. Well, this is a question for you, Shelley. Do you agree with the BBC's political scientist, John Curtis, where he says we must now seriously consider a Conservative majority?
Well, I mean, I think that's really the big question. We're getting closer and closer to that magic number. And so, I mean, we may. I'm thinking it's unlikely, though, still, because it's still quite a tight, I mean, not a tight race necessarily, but, you know, I don't necessarily think we're going to get quite to 326.
Yeah.
Look at that. Jim Murphy just lost his seat.
Certainly breaking news as it happens. We're actually going to have to cut you guys off there and head straight back to Scotland, where we have on the line, I believe, is it Daniel? Daniel with some breaking news for us. How are you, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm just out of the count at Paisley Renshaw North. Jim Sheridan has lost his seat. Obviously, you heard earlier on, Douglas Alexander lost to Manny Black. Jim Sheridan's lost by an even greater majority, 9,000. Yet again, another comfortable Labour seat. Jim Sheridan, a long-serving MP, 1997. And he's joined the cull of Labour MPs in the middle of the hall, just as Jim Sheridan was giving his farewell speech. We heard spreading like wildfire through the crowd that Jim Murphy, a Scottish Labour leader, has also lost his seat in East Renfrewshire to the SNP. So quite astonishing up here.
This on the surface does sound quite detrimental to Labour. Can you put that into perspective for us?
Well, Jim Murphy's only a very recent addition as new Labour leader. Came in at the start of the year to try and turn around their ailing fortunes. Since he's arrived, the polls have only got worse and worse and worse. And I think we're seeing that the Conservatives are going to have a very, very large majority thanks to the many, many seats that Labour have lost tonight in Scotland. I think what this means is that the SNP are going to have to fill that gap if Labour form any kind of working government, and that's going to have it's going to be difficult for Labour to implement the manifesto without Scottish nationalist influence.
So that SNP landslide that you predicted so accurately at the start of the show seeming to hold true so far?
Absolutely. There was just something in the air today. And I think going around polling stations, that everyone could feel it, that it was just, it was going to be the SNP's night, and it turned out that way. And I don't think anyone could have predicted quite the swings that we're hearing. We're hearing some like 39% in Eastern Bartonshire. You probably know better than I will. The swings are quite astonishing. No one could have predicted on the 19th of September, after a comfortable no vote, that we would see so many pro-independence MPs elected from Scotland. And yeah, it's come to pass. Just, again, evidence of how Scottish politics has changed, probably for good.
Yeah, well, we just had with us in the studio at the moment Shelley and Paddy, and we were talking about how things so far this evening, whether they've turned out as expected. Did either of you two expect the rise of SNP in Scotland and the real detrimental sort of a loss to Labour so far?
Well, I think there was that kind of sense that the SNP was going to do quite well, but just as well as it's done, I don't think anybody really predicted that, did they?
I think one thing that's been crucial for their unbelievable success in this election, which will be one of the two stories, is that and it's David Cameron hanging on, you know, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. The Scots Nats have managed to position themselves to the left of Scottish Labour. Scottish Labour, in particular, you know, now ex-MP Jim Murphy, didn't know how to respond to that. They've never had, you know, to deal with a challenger on the left. They've been the left party. There was a Scottish Conservative Party, the likes of Malcolm Rifkind, who, you know, is now no longer an MP, just stepped down, but had to move to a safe seat in Kensington. And so, you know, they have drawn quite a lot of people who don't necessarily side with them on the constitutional issue, but do you side with them on ideology?
Well, thanks ever so much, Dan. Thanks very much for bringing us that latest breaking news from Scotland. I trust that you'll keep us up to date with anything more that breaks.
And thank
you. No problem. I'll do. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, and thank you, Shelley and Paddy. We'll be chatting to you shortly.
Cheers.
Thanks very much. So it's back to our student campus to see how well the residents know their politics.
We've already found out that the students know candidates from Labour and Conservatives very well, but how is their knowledge when it comes to the Liberal Democrats Party?
Who is the leader of the Liberal Democrats?
Oh, that's the guy with the black hair, Nick Clegg.
Lib Dems. The Liberal Democrat Party.
What's his name? Nick Clegg.
If you can call him a leader, Nick Clegg.
Nick Clegg.
No.
Nick Clegg.
Nick Clegg. Yeah.
George McFree. No.
Nick Clegg.
We're back with our expert panel, Shelley and Paddy.
That mid-Dorset and North Pool seat, were you surprised?
Yes. I didn't think it was going to turn out quite that way. I think as a broader pattern, a lot of, you know, a lot of the very tensely fought marginals have kind of fallen along the lines of the exit polls, the surprise exit poll that we got at the beginning of the evening.
Well, thanks so much. Don't forget that you can get in contact with us on Twitter this evening. Tweet us at yourelection15, using the hashtag YE15, start your tweets with the word radio, and we'll be hearing much from you later on in the show. It's just coming up to 20 past three. We're expecting results to come flying in about left, right, and centre. Hopefully they're going to be on the way. Some sometime shortly. Very shortly, I'm actually going to be getting the roaming mic back out and heading upstairs to the online team to see how they're faring up this evening, I should say this morning, and see how their coverage is going upstairs. I went downstairs to check on the TV crews earlier. They're streaming live to Your Election 15 on the website, and they've been doing a sterling job.
I've actually just been told that it was 30 degrees in Studio 1 in the TV area, so...
I wouldn't say it's that hot here, but it's certainly not far away. I'm going to go mid-20s, I think, in our studio at the moment.
See, I think I'm getting a cool breeze coming out. But yeah, I'm quite glad we're not sat in 30 degrees.
Also, later on in the show, we'll also be hearing more of our political playlist that Hannah and I spent a night scratching our brains over, trying to think of any songs that have been either A, used by political parties, or songs with strong political meaning that have been comprised by many different artists. We've heard the likes of UB40 and Bruce Springsteen so far in the show. I'm sure there'll be plenty more on the way. I noticed that our television pundit, Mr. Matt Joy, is on his way back into the studio. I'm sure he's been enjoying the luxuries of his comfy chair, his headphones on, and watching some great TV coverage of the elections.
Hey, Matt.
Hello. You're still bitter about that. What is it now? Nearly 6 hours? About 5.5 hours in, you're still bitter about me getting to watch TV.
Well, you'll be, let it go.
You'll be happy that I've not actually been watching TV. I've been out and about.
Ooh, what have you been up to?
I've poked my head downstairs to have a little look around, see how our own election coverage is panning out. And I must say, it's a very professional operation down there.
Is it going well?
It's going very well. I watched a little bit of it that was being recorded live. They all look fantastic. But I went into behind the scenes, the script writing, and they are so on it down there. They are being drilled very, very hard to make sure that, you know, what they need is done. They have bulletins. I think they have a running order every half an hour which has to be done. It is being done. They are working so hard, and I must commend them for a fantastic job that they are doing down there.
Brilliant. That's good.
So you've also been checking out the likes of Sky, BBC, Channel 4 and ITV.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to rate them in a particular order...
Are we going sort of worst to best?
Let's start with the worst and work our way upwards. Things can only get better.
As the song goes, I'd go ITV worst, which I think you'll agree with me.
You were
based
in a
on my...
foul mood after you had been watching ITV for half an hour.
I was in a horrible mood. I was a bit ashamed of myself.
We were supposed to see you every hour and you stormed back in after just 25 minutes saying, "That's it, I've had enough of ITV, I'm not watching anymore."
I don't think the instructions were that. I think I was drafted in. But in fairness, it was a blessing in disguise because I did need to be drafted in at that point. So yeah, that would be my bottom. Then I'd probably go to, I think, the BBC.
Oh, really? That's surprising.
The BBC coverage I felt was a bit too... They were just a bit too sceptical and they're a bit too cynical. There was information coming out, but a lot of it was based around, you know, we've got a candidate on. Let's just say, you know, let's just go into him. Say all the things he's done wrong. You've lost a load of votes. What does that mean for your leader and all that sort of stuff? And it's just like, give the poor man or woman a chance. Like,
it's good to challenge them though, sometimes, isn't it?
I think that's the problem though. When you think about all the sort of stuff about, you know, the lack of trust in politicians and the lack of, you know, faith that the public have in them, it's not helped when they come on. They've been up, you know, for probably doing 20-hour days for a week, and they just get absolutely just hammered with questions about, you know, what do you think of your leader? Right, why do you think you've lost this election? And all that sort of stuff. It's just like, commend them if they are doing something good as well, because at the end of the day, they are public servants and they are trying to, you know, serve us. And it's just, I felt BBC was a little bit too sceptical, a little bit too aggressive. I'm going to go next. I'd probably go Sky News. That was, again, a little bit less sceptical, but I think it's a sort of theme with the sort of mainstream media is they are very sceptical. And they definitely had that sort of firm questioning. But it was broke up with a few more facts. It was a bit more, you know, they were thanking them a lot more after the interview. You know, they were saying all the best. Just little stuff like that. They seemed to be showing more respect as opposed to BBC, which did seem to lack a bit of respect, a bit of, you know, disregard for them as people. They may be politicians, but they're people as well. And they were just getting slated. But Sky were, you know, a little bit better on that front. And then I would go for the best coverage I've seen so far today, aside from our own, which
I was going to say, be careful then,
No, it's fantastic what we've been doing. But of the mainstream channels, I would go for Channel 4 because, as I said when I came on and talked about it, they have a good mix. They had a good mix of knowledge, a bit of comedy, a bit of satire, a few features coming on the show. And they mixed it up well. They didn't. It wasn't stagnant. It wasn't, you know, they weren't stuck in a rut. They had it was very flowing. They were all respect each other. Everyone's views came across without each other shouting. You know, there was information was being shown clearly. When not much was going on, it was very lighthearted. When more was going on, they knew when to say, right, less comedy, more information, which was good to see. They all knew their places. And I would say, for me, so far, in the 5 and a bit hours that I've been watching, I would go for Channel 4 to be the best.
Gotta love Channel 4. Mm.
So what's next for you this evening then, Matt?
That's a bit of an interesting question. I only have one thing left to watch, which is the behind-the-scenes Sky footage, which is being... It's interesting, it's being recorded instead of big camera crews. They are being recorded on sort of handheld, so it's kind of like they're vlogging it, kind of, just doing a tour of the Sky Centre, which would be interesting to see behind the scenes.
A little bit more intimate.
Exactly. Then after that, I'll probably revisit, have a look now things are starting to hot up, maybe give some stations a second chance and see where we go from there, see what I'm told to watch.
Thanks very much for that, Matt. We'll see you again shortly.
Thank you, Matt. See you later.
As you are well aware, we are focusing on the elections here in Dorset across the 8 constituencies. I can now throw you over live to John, who is out in the field with some latest statistics for us. Hello, John.
Hello. Things have been calm for the last 2 hours here in Christchurch, but just now they came up with a total number of voters. So the electorate, the people who were eligible for voting were around 70,000. 50,000 people actually voted. So that's so in terms of percentages, that's 72.1%. And that's more compared than last time, but in numbers less. So the atmosphere is building up right now as the two candidates who seem to be getting the most votes, the UKIP candidate, Robin Gray, and the Conservative candidate, Christopher Chope, they're both walking around the people who are counting the votes and hoping for the best.
Thanks very much, John. Just recap for us, what time are you expecting to hear some results in?
They told us earlier that they believe the results will be out by 4 a.m., but given that they pulled back that time, that initially they said the results would be out at 2, then they said at 3 a.m., now they're saying at 4. I think, around 4 a.m., but if anything changes, I will report back in.
Thanks very much for that, John. We'll catch up with you around 4 a.m.
Thank you very much.
Now, one of your favourite features that we've been listening to this morning is our little playlist that we've comprised of political songs that have either been involved with a political party in their particular movement or just are completely politics-related in terms of vocals. I can't quite believe that the next one is going to be played out. This is Where Is the Love, Black Eyed Peas.
Good song.
Oh, I was mad about this song.
Yeah, I think I was as well.
I went through a massive Black Eyed Peas phase.
I think I know all the words.
Do you want to sing along?
I won't do that.
Topping the charts in the UK and in Australia, Where Is the Love remains one of the Black Eyed Peas' most successful songs. And like a lot of other tracks in our playlist, Where Is the Love is not a protest song, but more a call to action for worldwide change. The song addresses global issues such as terrorism, US government hypocrisy, racism, gang crime, pollution, and war. Wow, I'm very pleased that song made it in. It's moving, to say the least, and some true lyrics ringing out there for you. Also on the way, I believe we have The Monkees, I Am a Believer. Let's see if that one's in the playlist. Of course, probably most recognised from being in Shrek. But there's so much more to this song. When the Monkees released their famous hit single, I'm a Believer, in 1966, little did they know that their song would go on to be used in the multi-million-dollar animated movie about a green ogre called Shrek. Yet, that is much less surprising than the song's use this year in 2015, in which, oh yes, Nigel Farage used the track early on in the UKIP election campaign.
Of course.
Well done, Farage. An excellent choice, I have to say. The time is approaching 3:30, which means it is time for your latest news update with Tim Smith. He's back. It's nearly 3:30.
Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM, this is your Election 50.
It's 3:30, I'm Tim Smith, and this is the latest news. Breaking news, the Scottish Labour leader Jim Murphy has lost his seat in Renfrewshire East to the SNP. It is one of a series of gains that the Scottish Nationalists have made from Labour. Among their victims are the leading Labour politician Douglas Alexander. He says it's been a good few years.
To serve the people of Renfrewshire is a heavy but joyful responsibility, and I wish her all the success in doing that job in the course of this Parliament. Can I place on record my immense gratitude to the people of Renfrewshire? I will always be grateful for having had that opportunity to serve.
Tessa Gell, a former Labour Culture Secretary, says her party must learn lessons from the sheer scale of losses to the SNP. Sources at the South Dorset count predict that the turnout will be between 75 to 80%. In 2010, it was around 68%. Rumours are also coming filtering through that the turnout at West Dorset is 70 to 75%. The seat at Hartlepool is currently being recounted. It's believed that it's very close between Labour and UKIP. If the UK Independence Party can gain the constituency, it would be seen as a huge surprise. The result is due to be announced shortly. A senior Liberal Democrat source has told ITV it's a bad night for the party. The source blames the Conservatives' fear factor tactics about a potential Labour-SNP deal. The source was speaking from Lib Dem leader Nick Clegg's count in Sheffield Hallam. The exit poll predicts Labour will win 239 seats, far short of a majority. Former Labour Cabinet Minister David Blunkett thinks that could be right, but Shadow Health Secretary Andy Burnham doesn't agree.
Lots of respect for David, but it's just too early to say that. Lots of results yet to come in, so we'll have to see what happens. The exit poll doesn't tally with what I've been hearing on the ground up and down the country. Ed has led us superbly through this campaign.
Labour's deputy leader Harriet Harman thinks Ed Miliband could still be Prime Minister even if the Conservative Party end up ahead. She's tried to put a positive spin on the exit poll by suggesting that even if the Tories win the most seats, they may not be able to stay in power. So good news for the Labour Party as they take Ealing Central and Acton from the Conservatives and Burnley from the Lib Dems. The Conservatives have held Warwickshire North. The seat was down as Labour's number one target. Dan Byles keeps his seat. David Cameron has arrived at the Witney count. He came onto the floor shortly after 2:30 this morning and has spent his time chatting to counters. He walked straight past the cameras, making no comment as broadcasters asked him how it was going. Nicola Sturgeon says it looks like it's going to be a very, very good night for the SNP. The leader of the Scottish National Party made the statement as she arrived at the Glasgow count. You're up to date. Join us again at 4.
Streaming live on yourelection.co.uk and in partnership with Hope FM. You're listening to Your Election 50.
That was Tim. Thank you very much, Tim. So, as it happens, it appears I have lost Dom. From what I hear, Dom is currently upstairs exploring the inner workings of our busy online team. Dom,
hello.
Hello, Dom. Can you set the scene up there for us?
I can indeed. It's manic up here. There's new streams going on every screen. There's about four or five different screens in the room on the wall. And then everyone sat at a Mac as well in front of them, working really, really, really hard. I might be brave enough to try and interrupt some people and just look over their shoulders. They're really busy. I feel so rude. Hello. Sorry, we're live on the radio right now. It's Your Election 15, going out live on 90.1 Hope FM as well. I'll have a look on their face as I've just come and sat next to them. Who do we have here? Is it Holly? Hello, Holly.
Hi, I'm Holly Wong. I'm Deputy Online Editor for tonight.
That's a big title.
It is a big title. It's really manicure, but it's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. You guys are enjoying it so far?
Yeah, really enjoying it. Yeah, it's fast-paced, but everyone's really enjoying their roles, getting into it. I've never had so many political discussions in my life.
So let's talk politics. Any surprises for you so far this evening?
No surprises as such, but the SNP gain in Scotland has been monumental, really, really stark, and very impressive for the SNP. I think Labour are going to be licking their wounds by the end of the night.
I'm sure they will be. Thanks so much. And who do we have here? Naomi, hello.
Yes, I'm Naomi, and I'm the online editor for...
Okay, so looks like we've just lost Dom up there. We're going to go to Steph now. Steph, can you hear me? Anything from Steph? Oh, hello, Steph.
Hi.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great. I'm here in Littledown Centre with Mr. Hughes, who's the UKIP candidate for Bournemouth East.
Brilliant.
Am I live now? Am I on air?
Yes, yeah, you're on live. You're live now. Your voice is going everywhere.
Amazing. So, Mr. Hughes, what are your expectations about the outcome for UKIP?
Well, I think the indications that are coming from the count at the moment, I guess we're probably making a fairly respectable race. And I think it'd be very nice to think that we could be winning. I don't think that's happening. But to come second is really still a significant achievement for UKIP, because in previous general election counts, we've never made it ahead of any of the establishment Westminster parties. So I think
we've
got to be satisfied with that and
chalk
that up as a relative.
And what do you think is the reason of the rising popularity of your party?
Well, I think over the last few years there's been significant changes, certainly in Europe, since the last general election.
Stephanie, sorry to interrupt. Would you be able to put the mic a little bit more to his mouth just so we can hear him a bit clearer?
With creating an increased level of immigration, which has become a concern for many people, and that's really
okay, so apologies for that. That was Stephanie over there. So just to recap, this is Your Election 15, streaming on the web at yourelection15.co.uk in Bournemouth, Poole and Christchurch on 90.1 Hope FM. Please get in touch with us via Twitter using the hashtag YE15 and starting your message with the word radio. Dom, looks like he is just coming back into the studio. Oh.
Hello.
Hi, Dom. How did it go?
Well, it was quite fun up there. I'm gutted that I lost connection with you guys. I do apologise about that. Apparently, the further up the building you go, the worse the Wi-Fi gets.
Oh, I see.
Who would have thought? £9,000 a year tuition fee we pay. Still, we can't get good internet. It's very, very busy up there. I can't quite believe how frantic it is.
Yeah,
it's just so much more
exciting.
What's the
atmosphere like?
Well, everyone looks hard at work. I felt really rude sort of peering over their shoulder and interrupting them, but they were doing a grand sterling job. Everyone really enjoying their roles. A lot of political conversations going on, as you'd expect. They all seem to know what they're doing. So
that's always reassuring.
Very entertaining.
Lovely. Okay, so it is now 38 minutes past three.
Yep, we're live on Your Election 15 at 90.1 Hope FM. You're listening to Dom, and I'm joined here by Betty.
Yeah.
Not Hannah, but Betty. She'll do for now. Bournemouth University, and we're bringing you all the live latest election results throughout the night.
But first, we're joined live by our political editor, Alex Folcard.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
I've been listening to you. I think you've been doing fantastic, I've got to say.
Brilliant.
It's great, great Thanks. Stuff. But yes, I have an update for you. Just in recent time, we've seen a huge monumental shift in the geopolitical makeup of this country. I mean, Jim Murphy, the Labour Scottish leader, we've seen him toppled in a bout of what can only be described as SNP hysteria. I mean, they are snatching seats left, right and centre, in particularly from Labour, which have suffered monumentally from the SNP support this year. S&P have gained Cumbernauld from Labour. But a few other updates as well. Chelsea has been held by the Tories. Stephen Kinnock has won a seat in Aberavon. But the big, big story that has literally just come on the screens here in the radio room, Ed Davey tonight is a defeated man, the latest collateral for the Lib Dems. Will they live through the onslaught tonight to rue the day they got in bed with the Tories? That is the main story. Jim Murphy will, I hope, well, beyond gutted tonight, I think, is the phrase. He's been out campaigning, battling the SNP tide, but to no avail.
Aww.
Well, thanks very much for that, Alex. Anything else that you reckon we should be keeping our eyes peeled for? What's on the horizon over the next, I'd say, probably about hour, really, when things really start kicking off?
Well, in the not-too-distant horizon, I mean, this is becoming quite a long exercise, I've got to admit, but we are shortly arriving at some Dorset results, which should be very exciting. I mean, any minute now, we should be expecting Mid-Dorset and North Pool, which is such a hotly contested seat. It's an ultra-marginal Lib Dem Conservative competitive seat. Annette Brooke was the incumbent. She's now had to step down, and Vicky Slade is trying to fill her boots. But I mean, the Tory Tomlinson could pinch it from her at the last. And in terms of the Lib Dem makeup of the South, it is so crucial. It's a bastion on the South Coast for them as a party. And who knows? I mean, the dominoes could fall into Somerset, into the Lib Dem strongholds, sort of around Bristol and that sort of area. Who knows where this could go tonight? The Lib Dems, my God, they are
nervous times. For
licking
them.
Licking their wounds is the phrase.
And the best thing is, we'll be able to bring you that information about that hotly contested marginal seat in Dorset live, bringing it to you first before anyone else here on Your Election 15, online and live across 90.1 Hope FM. Thanks very much, Alex. We'll speak to you again very shortly.
Cheers,
guys. Okay, so I'm now joined by a new panel here to talk about the environment, I've been informed kindly by my producer. So let's see, who have we got? We have Erin. Hello.
Hi, Erin.
Alice.
Hello, Alice.
And Sam as well. Hello, how are you all doing?
Good.
Thank you.
I'm good, thanks.
A little bit tired now.
A little bit tired. So you're here to talk to us about the environment.
Yes.
Take it away.
Well, we feel that the parties haven't really taken into account what's going on with the environment, haven't really had it at the top of their agenda. Even the Green Party have been kind of penalised for not really, bringing their environmental policies to the top of what they're doing. The environment is really important. We're using our resources, the natural resources, 44 times faster than the Earth can actually regenerate it. So these are going to run out at some point, and it's going to be a problem for us.
Yeah, in 2010, the parties played way more emphasis on it. I don't understand why it's been forgotten in this general election. The environment isn't going away. We live in it. I don't understand why it's not more important. It's sad.
What do you want to see done about the environment then by the major political parties? What do you want to see?
Long-term plans. Long-term plans don't win elections, do they?
Long-term plans for?
Combating emissions, global agreements on proper climate change. Not like Ed Miliband came out and said he will start the fight to win, to get an agreement with Paris to stop climate change, but that's so vague.
Do you think that students are really interested in the environment? Do you think that's what students are looking to vote for, someone that is going to help the environment?
I'm not so sure anymore.
Well, I would say so, because the environment, everyone goes, the Greens only care about the environment. That is where we live. And as a younger generation, we are growing up with the consequences of the global warming that is happening at the minute. Parties like UKIP, whose policies I think are quite damaging, to be scrapping green subsidies, scrapping green taxes, building nuclear energy. This is not the way forward. These resources are not unlimited. They will run out at some point.
That's great. So in terms of other environmental changes, like the Green Party, obviously we've seen them sort of rise towards having a bigger prominence in government so far. They've certainly drawn a lot more attention to themselves. Is it fair to say you're disappointed then by the Green Party in the fact that there hasn't been enough emphasis on policies regarding the environment? Instead, you've been more focused on policies that will make them a more major player in Westminster.
I think in the case of the Green Party, they really didn't have a choice. It seems like kind of unfair to criticise them, considering in the past elections, they've always been called a one policy party. And people have just kind of not voted for them based on the fact that they're just seen as a one policy party. And now that they're trying to branch out, people are saying like they're abandoning, you know, what they stand for. But I mean, they still stand pretty heavily for, you know, green, you know, everything they stood for before. It's just now they kind of have to play a game where they need enough votes to actually change the country or get close to being elected.
So in terms of the environment benefiting then under a future government, what needs to happen? Who needs, in your opinion, who needs to be in power and what policies do they need to put in place? Obviously, you've talked about some of the subjects that they need to find solutions to, but is the fact that there just aren't the solutions out there?
Well, the Liberal Democrats have come out and said they will double renewable energy, electricity by 2020. I think that's so important because our resources are running out. And invest, as the Conservatives have said, $500 million over the next 5 years towards making a zero carbon emissions zone. But I'm just worried that they'll go back on their promises. Like, the Conservatives seem to be desperate to still seem green when they're really not. So I'm a bit worried, really.
Do you think that there's like a massive emphasis on just like the whole economic problems in Great Britain at the moment, and that's why the Green Party aren't necessarily getting a lot of look in at the moment as such? So a lot of students don't feel like they should vote for the Green Party just because, oh, it's, you know, just the environment, when their people seem more focused about the economic problems.
I mean, that does seem to be their main focus. I, you know, like, the economy has definitely kind of taken over the last two elections. But I guess as things start to get better for people, like, naturally, I think they'll look more for more kind of self, I guess. I guess they'll look more to the future, like policies that are actually will benefit them in the future rather than right now, because, you know, right now a lot of people are struggling.
Yeah.
Well, thanks ever so much for joining us this evening. It's been great to talk to you. What else are you guys up to for the rest of the night?
Oh, an array of different things, probably TV again, just keeping up to date with the vote counts that are coming in. It's quite interesting to see the diverse opinion in who's getting in and who isn't.
Yeah, the South Thanet seat should come in soon. I'm quite excited about that.
Yes, yes. Definitely. So are we. Eagerly anticipating.
Thank you very much for joining
us, guys.
Some breaking news for you now, and that is that The Echo is reporting that we won't get Dorset results until 6 a.m.
Whilst we await that delayed Christchurch result, our reporter for the constituency, John Cottrell, has managed to grab Conservative candidate Christopher Chope for a pre-result chat.
I'm with Christopher Chope, Conservative MP and candidate for Christchurch. Christopher, could you tell me, you have been an MP for 14 years. What made you decide to run once more?
I was first elected here in 1997. And so, on my calculations, that means that I've done 97, 2007, 17.
17 years?
Yes.
My mistake.
I think. In fact, I think it's actually around, if you round it up, it's 18 years anniversary during this election campaign. And so this is my fifth general election in Christchurch, and it's a fantastic place to be able to represent, and I hope to be able to carry on with the privilege of representing this constituency.
Mm-hmm. What do you believe are the most concerning issues in this area?
Yeah, well, the national issues that concern people here are issues relating to the economy, and that's why the Conservatives are doing well, because the economy is recovering, and there's a strong recovery there. This is a constituency with the largest number of people over the age of 75 in the country, and so our policies for elderly people are very popular, and what we've done with pensioners with a triple lock and the guarantee of continuing benefits in kind for pensioners. That's popular. And then there's also a strong feeling that we need to have a completely fresh relationship with the European Union. And that's shared amongst both myself and the UKIP candidate. And I expect by the time the votes are counted that we, between us, will have got the very large proportion of the votes of the Christchurch population, thereby showing that Christchurch is quite a Eurosceptic area.
So how are you feeling about tonight's election?
Well, I'm feeling very excited at the prospect that we're going to be able to have another Conservative government. That's good news for the country.
So you're certain for your victory?
I'm not certain of my victory here because the votes haven't been counted yet. But on the basis of the response that we had, we are confident that this is a seat which we can hold.
So you don't find alarming the, let's say, increased number of UKIP supporters here?
Well, the UKIP is a young party. It's very well funded. I think they've massively outspent us in their campaign, and they've got plenty of enthusiasm. But whether that's been turned into hard votes, we'll have to wait and see.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we've got breaking news that Lib Dem candidate Ed Davey loses seat to Tory candidate James Berry in Kingston and Surbiton constituency.
Okay, so now I'm back in the newsroom and Dom has now left us again. He's gone roaming with his mic and he's now in the radio newsroom talking to our lovely news team. Dom, can you hear us?
Hello, I can indeed hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you perfectly.
Oh, excellent. So I am back behind the I'm back behind the scenes in the newsroom. This is where it's all happening for the radio team. So everything that we've been emitting out on air has to be scripted, crafted, researched and created by someone in this very room. So here I am with our head of news for the evening. Is that the right title? We'll go with it. It's Danielle.
Hello. Very stressed.
How are you feeling?
I'm okay at the minute. I've had two cans of Monster, so I'm literally buzzing at the minute.
Her pupils look very, very wide right now. So how has it all been going from a journalistic perspective this evening? Has it been quite a challenge?
It has been a challenge, but I've got a really, really strong team. They've literally been really on it. So I'd like to just say thank you to all of them at the minute.
Can we get a cheer from the news team, please? There you go. It gives you a bit of an idea of the camaraderie that we have back here. High spirits. Let's talk politics very briefly, Danielle. Has it been much of a surprise for you so far, how the evening's turned out?
Yeah, a little bit, especially with all the Scottish National Party votes and stuff. Been quite a few of those coming in, but other than that, yeah.
Well, I'll let you crack back on because I know that you've got a bulletin to get ready in just over 5 minutes' time. I'm going to see if I can grab a word with, here he is, the couch potato. I found him. It's Mr. Matt Joy. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very relaxed.
So what are you watching for us right now? I see BBC.
I've just put on BBC. I was having a bit of an issue with this Sky Arts, which was the handheld sort of vlogging experience. I was having a bit of trouble with that, so I've gone to BBC. I think I'd give them a bit of criticism at it, so I thought I'd go back earlier. I'd go back to them now. And it's a lot more interesting than when I was watching it earlier.
Let me just describe Matt's position for you right now. Reclined in a swivel chair, okay? Top button of his jeans undone, a very relaxed position, and I'm just going to count them up. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 empty coffee cups. 5 on his desk next to his computer. Do you know how many cups of coffee I've had all evening, Matt?
I think it's less than 5.
One. I've been given 1. There we go. A little bit of a warning to you guys there. Mine's milk and 2 sugars. Mr. Jack Clark, you're also here this evening. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm very stressed, but no, I'm good.
Jack, you've been playing quite an important role with the news team. You're responsible for anything breaking.
So yeah, anything breaking comes through to Danielle, our news editor. Then basically it comes over to me, and my job is to put all that over to the studio via electronics, but also writing up scripts, all the latest stuff. Busy, busy, busy.
Very busy indeed. I feel like I should probably leave these fine people to get back on with their work. I feel like I've disturbed them enough. So, back to the studio.
Thanks, Dom, for that. Okay, so now Dom has been roving, so he's going to come back ASAP. We're hoping to get back in the studio with me and Betty, as we are missing him, of course.
Yep, big time.
Now, we're still waiting for the results to come in, but obviously throughout the night we have been talking about the political songs that me and Dom put together. Now we do want your suggestions, of course. Just remember to tweet us at hashtag YE15 and start your tweet with the word radio, as we want your suggestions.
Also, you can contact us via Facebook. Just search for Your Election 15 with no spaces and post a message on the wall, again beginning it with the word radio.
Okay, so up next we have the song White Riot by The Clash. The anti-establishment element that is so crucial. Oh, yeah, there it is. It's quite full on at this time in the morning.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm enjoying the beat right now.
It's not the right song for this atmosphere, I have to admit.
So, this song was released in 1975, and it addresses issues such as class economics and race.
Now, due to the ambiguous title of the song, the track was sometimes misconstrued as advocating race war, when instead it was intended to encourage white youths to find a worthy cause to riot.
Okay, so now we have our new panel with us.
Hi guys, David, you're back again. You just can't keep away, can you?
That's because you're playing The Clash. I love The Clash.
Oh, do you? Big fan.
Yeah, big fan, yeah.
Okay, so we've got David, Tom and Chris with us, our student panel.
Hi guys.
Hello.
There we go, talking to the mic. Don't be scared. Do not be scared, guys.
Right, so what do you guys have for us?
We've come on to talk about the potential of Nigel Farage and Nick Clegg both losing their seats in their constituencies. Is obviously quite a big thing for both the parties if that were to happen.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Nigel Farage saying that he will resign if he isn't happy.
Yeah.
But
yes, that's what he said. So, if he fails to get elected, he has promised he will leave UKIP. And what's interesting about that is, first of all, well, who would take over as the new UKIP leader? Presumably it would be somebody like Douglas Carswell, who's already an MP. I don't know if we've heard about his seat yet, but I think it's a fairly safe one for him. But more broadly, there'd be that question of, well, what would the place of UKIP be now in UK politics? Because he's made them into this big force of personality, really. But if the Conservatives end up getting a strong enough majority, their influence over the party and the voters may be lowered a little bit.
Yeah. I think it'd be really weird seeing Nigel Farage not as the leader of UKIP, because he's a stereotypical, isn't he? You always see him with the cigar and the beer walking around, and then if he's then representing the party, I mean, who will take his place? Will they fit into his shoes?
Well, he has particular shoes that, that are very much handcrafted. I think that's one of the problems with some of the stories we're hearing about, oh, this Ed Davies left, or Jim Murphy's left, or maybe Nigel Farage won't get elected. There's a lot of focus on specific personalities, and that was my impression of this whole campaign. It was a personality-driven one with not too much policy. Mm. I don't know if you agree with that.
I mean, Nigel Farage has been the face of UKIP. If he goes, I think, in terms of UKIP support, it will drop dramatically. I don't think anyone can live up to his sort of personality. I think that's what's won voters over. But obviously, they haven't come out in support.
I'm interested, actually, the two of you being students. I'm not actually a student, unless a very young-looking lecturer. I mean, the two of you, I mean, have you as students really got much policy stuff from the news, or does it filter down to you, I suppose, as this is a famous person, this is a famous person, or is it this person believes this about this and this person believes that about this? What's your experience of that?
Well, I mean, obviously we're politics students, so we do actually learn about it anyway, but we do get the feeling that most of it has been about the people behind it, and I don't know. Sorry, what was the question? I've actually forgotten.
It happens. It's that time in the morning.
Sorry, I apologise.
So is Nigel, because Nigel, he's more of a character, isn't he? He's not, I personally don't look at him and go, oh, he believes in this and this. Like, to me, he is just a guy walking
such
around
a big personality.
With a pint and smoking and just chilling. That's how I always see him. Like, I don't actually know his policies. That's a really good point.
Well, it's interesting, is it? Because a lot of his policies are actually some people, a lot of people don't support them because actually when they think about it, they kind of make no sense. Purely speaking as a legal person, from a legal perspective, this is a lot of the things he says about withdrawing from the European Union, for example. When you look at it actually under the microscope, it would have very little effect on existing UK laws. And also, he's proposing withdrawing from the EU and then kind of forming a relationship with the EU similar to what Norway and Switzerland has, which is to essentially obey EU laws without actually having any control over what they are, and we do have a say in them. So I think that's the danger with these personality-based politics, is they can overshadow actually deeper views. I mean, Boris Johnson's a great example. Do either of...
Okay, we've got the news. The news is just coming on. So we've got Jeff coming on for the news. So thank you guys for
coming
and talking to us.
Thank you very much for joining us.